I'm Gab, he's Jules. Cloudy skies over West London. Definitely not cloudy in the blue half of Manchester. Manchester City are Premier League champions. We'll get to all the other stuff. There's the small business of that Mbappe. Staying. There's Milan winning the Serie A title. Like plenty more. And Super Mario Balotelli. Squeezing him in at the end. Oh, shout out to Leon as well. Women's Champions League final. But
amazing win.
Let's start with the Premier League. Drama, entertainment. I mean, Liverpool conceding early.
Yeah.
Manchester City going 2-0 down. The Fernandinho issues. I was feeling kind of smug at that point, simply because, you know, the point I've been banging on about all season, 17 outfield players.
But it didn't apply here, because Zinchenko could have well started. Stones and Laporte are centre-backs, and Cancelo are right-back. He didn't need Fernandinho. Okay.
Stones, not fit.
Doesn't matter.
Fernandinho,
fit enough
old
to play.
Ake, not fit. I mean,
But had there been no other alternative on the bench, you would have been completely vindicated.
Yeah, I think
you're
those
still
guys
vindicated, but Pep made a big mistake that almost cost him the title.
Well, we can't say about Pep. Sorry, Patrice. I love you, but this whole personality thing. Coming back, we said it last week. They come back. They're two goals down at West Ham. Yeah. They come back. They would have won the game had Riyad Mahrez converted his penalty. We wouldn't be having this conversation
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly.
And then here, 2-0 down at home, just sitting there waiting. Liverpool, surely they're drawing 1-1 at the time against Wolves. Surely Liverpool are going to score. Surely Liverpool are going to score. And then that madness, 3 goals in 6 minutes. I mean, tremendous drama.
Incredible. I was there. I could not believe it. When we thought we'd seen it all this season, overall in Europe, in the league, whatever, then this happened on the last day of the season, in the last 20 minutes of the season, is incredible. 3 goals in 5 minutes and 36 seconds. The stadium erupted. Riyad Mahrez, after the game, said to me, "We learned a lot from the Madrid defeat. And we did things in that game that maybe we wouldn't have done if we hadn't lost in Madrid." And I think they were incredible in personality, in the drive forwards. The second goal is the key one for Rodri, because he happened so quickly after the first one. And then you know in the stadium the third is going to come. There's no doubt. And I think the Villa players had switched off. But incredible achievement to come back that way to go and win this title.
We have to give a shout out to Liverpool. We'll be talking about Liverpool a lot more. Obviously, they had the chase for the quadruple. They're in the Champions League final.
Yes.
Jules, you and I are going to Paris on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, when they go a goal down, and then they equalize, and then they create chances, and then the news starts filtering through, it really ratchets up the pressure. And I think in the back of their minds, they're like, "My God, how cruel would this be if we don't score?" I mean, at no point were Liverpool champions over the 90 minutes, which is pretty incredible when you consider City were 2-0 down.
It was crazy. I wonder if things would have been different had Liverpool been in the lead from the beginning, and the pressure on City would have been even higher.
Yes.
Because City knew, even when they were losing, they were still champions. And I don't know if that played. Maybe that didn't play at all and things. But for Liverpool, I mean, it's cruel. This is football. But once again, you lose the title by 1 point. You lost less games than City. You haven't lost at home all season in the league. And yet you still can't do it. It's incredible.
I think it's from the Liverpool angle, it's a very fair narrative of what Klopp is doing is really, really special in these years.
Yeah.
And the fact that he hasn't won more title. I mean, I think if you mentioned, we were talking about earlier, you said, you know, it's story of my life finishing second.
Well,
no, you've
said
won a few things
as
well.
I know, but I see his point too.
But yeah, he's unlucky to be there running up against this City. But I want to ask you about City's legacy. Because I know people are conflicted about it, and I try to be plain speaking. There is an elephant in the room, and with
the stadium.
Well, with the ownership, right? With that regime in the Emirates. It may not be Saudi, but it's certainly not, I think, in line with what a lot of people would be comfortable with.
Mm.
There is an issue with the sponsorship deals, with financial fair play. They did breach financial fair play in 2014, settled it. Later, they won the later case after the Spiegel revelations at CAS. But let's not forget, as part of that case, they were found guilty and fined for obstructing the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the more recent Spiegel revelations. You have this Premier League inquiry, which has been going on for 3 years now, which seemingly never ends. I don't know if they're waiting for Khaldun to retire before they... I don't know what's going on with that. And yet, what they're doing is so excellent. It's so special. Yeah, they have the resources. Mm. But I genuinely think both things can be true. You can admire to no end the work that they put in, the professionalism, the people on the pitch, and at the same time, acknowledge these other things that maybe aren't right.
Yeah, you're right. I think on the pitch, this is excellence. Like Pep said, I think they're legends, eternal legends, maybe 4 titles in 5 years, 3 of them with 90 points plus, 100 points, 98, 93 this season. It's remarkable. It's incredible. I think the way they play, even if people find it boring, I don't care. I find it amazing, the players they have and that character, everything.
All right, we'll get to City in a minute, but I actually want to go back to Liverpool now and just reflect a little bit on what's happened. One bit of fallout from this game, and it's worth remembering, right? He left out Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
He had Salah on the bench.
Yeah.
Again, these are things I think that he's doing, obviously, with a view towards a Champions League final. That's certainly more than understandable. He played Thiago. He lost Thiago. At halftime, Thiago set up
incredible.
He set up a goal with a little back heel. Yeah, I thought that might have been your thing.
Yeah,
I thought there was a pretty big blunder on Wolves' opening goal as well.
We said to the kids, you say whatever age group you are in, whatever level, the one thing you say, let never the ball bounce or drop. It's a long kick. It's a goal kick. It's a goalkeeper kick, whatever. It's a free kick. The ball can never bounce. And he bounced. And Konate let it bounce.
I was just struck, though, by the fact that what Liverpool overcame in terms of injuries late in the season, in terms of playing all these matches, people will look at them. I've heard people say this, right? Against City, Chelsea, and Spurs, Liverpool didn't beat any of them in the league. And in the Carabao Cup, of course, and FA
they
Cup.
They finished the two draws, yeah.
They're the two draws. Although they beat City in the FA Cup, didn't they?
They beat City in the FA Cup, and they beat Spurs in the League Cup semifinals as well.
So it's not like it's some kind of voodoo hex. No. But the incredible thing is those six draws, those were the six draws of the season, right?
Yeah.
But I was looking, you come into January, you're chasing, right? If you're Liverpool,
you're 14 points behind, at that point.
I mean, for you to make up that distance, just some context here, right? Since January 2nd, which is the day that they drew with Chelsea, they only dropped points once, and that was recently. That was the game against Spurs when Klopp got all grumpy afterwards and whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, you struggle to think like in real time. There were situations where, you and I, we sit here, we do this every Monday and Thursday, we second guess, then we play Monday morning quarterback and we say, well, we could have done this differently, that differently, right? This is part of our job, right? But in the end, they didn't pay a price for any of those decisions. No. Maybe the Spurs game, maybe, but I mean, from, again, January 2nd to May 22nd, you drop points once.
Incredible.
That's incredible. Come back from 14 points while advancing to the League Cup final, while advancing to the FA Cup final, while advancing to the Champions League final. I mean, that's pretty surreal.
While having your
two best strikers and another one, Roberto Firmino, is pretty good, while having those guys in contractual situations as well. Because as we all know, they got a contract in 2023. While having your guru, director of football, or whatever Michael Edwards' job was, telling you, "Oh, look, I'm leaving."
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty. If you're Klopp, you can take a lot of credit here. I think.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you got the Luis Diaz bonus that we mentioned before was maybe not planned for now for January, but it's incredible. I don't think people realize maybe how incredible this season is. Maybe more than the 18-19 season when they finished with 97 points and still lost the title by 1 point to City.
Probably more incredible than when they won the title, for me.
Yeah, completely. But it was the pandemic, it was a different environment. But this is just incredible, the season they've had. Unbeaten at home in the league, only one defeat at home all season, which is the Inter one, where they were kind of in control after they've won the first leg in Italy. But on top of that gap, on top of everything you said, It's the style of football. It's the entertainment. Is all the movement. Is the Trent Alexander-Arnold. Is all the goals from Jota, Salah, Mane. I mean, a trio like this with all that goals. And yeah, they slightly behind City in terms of goals scored in the Premier League. But overall, I think this is they had never scored as many goals in the whole season. It's 150 and they still have one game to go. They would have played every single game that the season had to offer. Can you imagine every single game
Liverpool? Big deal. Gerard Houllier did that at Liverpool 30 years ago.
True.
But yes,
but that was a different time even, you know? And
yeah.
I just think it's incredible. And usually we say, oh, you never remember who finished second. You know, we only remember winners, really, usually. But I can guarantee you that in 20, 25 years' time, we will still talk about these Liverpool sides. Whatever they go on to achieve from now on, we will always, always mention them almost like if they were winners, even if they were
winners. That line that you said, I agree with you. People say this all the time. Oh, nobody remembers who finished second. Mm-hmm. It is one of the dumbest things.
It is,
but
it's not true in a way.
It's also not true.
Well,
who won the 1954 World Cup?
The 1954...
I will tell you.
Yeah,
West Germany won it.
I know.
Who do you think is more a part of history? West Germany or Hungary 1954?
I know, but...
Okay, 1974 World Cup.
Not many
people. Who won the World Cup in 1974?
Germany.
West Germany. Oh,
yeah.
Look. Oh, I see a pattern here, right, when it comes to Germany?
Yeah.
Sorry. Do we remember that? Or who's more a part of the fabric of history?
Still,
or the Dutch side that they beat
in
the final?
In the books, you only have the winners.
Because only Muppets sit there and
read
the list
matter.
Of winners.
It doesn't matter. You remember winners. But this Liverpool team is more than a team that finished second. And I feel for Klopp when I hear him saying, this is the story of my life, finishing second. He finished second to Bayern and when Pep was there, he finished second again. He must be sick of seeing Pep all the time everywhere, in a way, saying that as a joke.
Yeah, but
it is true. Okay. He would be one of the greatest ever, but he will have been a lot of times second.
He also won two league titles at Dortmund,
of course,
and he won a Champions League title. So
and he won the first title for Liverpool in 30 years, which is great.
Exactly.
But there's still a lot of second places too.
Let's move to City now, because we talked about the legacy, whatever. In the game itself, let's do some second guessing here, because the reason you have substitutions is to fix mistakes. When I look at the way City had chances. I'm not taking that away. But this was a game in which I thought Bernardo Silva was ordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Gabriel Jesus, not for the first time.
And that big chance that he missed on
was
the...
was ordinary.
Yeah.
At the back, obviously Fernandinho,
Fernandinho playing because it's his last game, and you know it. So you want to almost...
No,
it's a gift.
I genuinely think Fernandinho is playing because John Stones isn't fit.
Nah,
and you put him at right back.
John Stones is fit for 45 minutes then, but not for the whole game? In a game where you'll have a lot of the ball?
I think he looked at it and he said, all right, I'm not going to ask you to do anything more than that. We're going to have the ball all the time. You just sit here.
It's a big mistake.
I mean, we don't know what's behind there, but... This is a team which I felt at the end was running on fumes. We need to give a huge shout out to Rodri, because I think Rodri's been exceptional all season. De Bruyne, that move to set up the winner. And you can say it was inevitable. We knew it was going to happen. Yeah, but it's still Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah,
that other counterattack, the one where he slips earlier in the game. I mean, how does he run like that with the ball so quickly down?
He's so good.
It doesn't make any sense.
That transition.
Phenomenal player.
Transition running is incredible.
But you like to talk about subs, giving credit. I looked at the bench. There's not that many substitutions. He's got three substitutions. He actually has, as we said, a very limited pool of players at this stage.
One was used already for Zinchenko.
One he had to use for Zinchenko. Mm. Gundogan, another one. Contractual situation, uncertain future. He comes up big.
Incredible. I mean, and to be fair, the three substitutions that Pep made... all worked out. Zinchenko was a big part in two of the three goals, the one for Rodri especially, Sterling on the first one, and then Gundogan. He's got this incredible intelligence that we know that, and footballing IQ, but to be in the right place at the right time. Remember last season when he scored all those goals between October and December, always being in the right spot. And I think they probably said to him before, just be there, be around in the box. The ball is going to come. We don't want you to drop and go with Rodri on the halfway line to try to build up the actions and the move and everything. Just stay in the box, be there, and it's just an extra body, but he's got this incredible sense for it, which is crazy for a defensive midfielder. But the header is perfect, and then I think the third one, he knows the ball is going to come that way from De Bruyne, and then he's there. It's incredible considering we don't know what's going to happen with him. It's very much his Aguero moment, but for Gundogan in a slightly different style, but still he's very much there. It's remarkable from Pep. I think that Fernandinho was a big mistake, and then he rectified it in a way that I didn't even think he was ready for.
I want to touch upon somebody who I think, like Rodri, has been exceptional this season. And
he's the player of the season. I don't care about De Bruyne, Rodri. I don't care about De Bruyne. I don't care about Bernardo Silva. I don't care about anyone. Rodri is Man City's best player this season.
It says a lot that I was going to mention somebody who you haven't mentioned, João Cancelo.
Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me in this game, João Cancelo starting on the left, we know what a big part of City he is. When he moves centrally, you know, he's a wide playmaker. He's also effectively their central playmaker. Mm. And Pep made the point afterwards that they just clogged the area up. He couldn't come into the middle. I mean, when you were just too many bodies there.
Yeah.
So he switches him to the other flank and he sends, you know, brings on Zinchenko. And he sends him to the outside, which Cancelo can do. You know, again, maybe we can say it's an obvious adjustment because you had to get Fernandinho out of there. But equally, I have to give credit to Cancelo to have a player who's so effective on either flank in different ways, who does so many things. Mm. In some ways, this title race for me, there's so many ways to look at it. But one of it is, to me, is also about Cancelo and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And what a modern fullback does, right?
They are crazy. They're just reinventing that position. I'm not sure even reinventing is the right word because I don't know. I don't think anyone else would be able to play like that. You know, you can...
Well, if you put Dani Alves in a time machine, he probably
could. But we're talking now. You know, is there a 15-year-old at an academy at Liverpool or City or Arsenal or somewhere where you can say, okay, we're going to try to mold you into that? I don't even think so. I think they are just freak of players. They're machines physically to start with, especially Cancelo. But technically, in all the assets that they have, that we can say this is a new breed of right back. I'm not even sure. This is just,
even Reece James
is an amazing right back, but in a very different way too. So it's just incredible.
All right, final word on the end. We had a pitch invasion. We've had a lot of pitch invasions recently, including Thursday night, the Everton game when they stayed up. We had two of them actually, 85th minute.
And Patrick Vieira, I didn't like that at all.
Patrick Vieira, not a fan. You know, City apologized for the assault on Robin Olsen. Robin Olsen said he was fine afterwards. Mm. Obviously, we're going to condemn pitch invasions and
We've
so on.
We've said it already.
I personally, I love happy pitch invasions. I think I love the notion of the fans coming onto their pitch. I don't want to hear this, it's my place of work, right? But you're going to blow this out. If you're going to lose what I think is actually, it's a rare and I think special moment for fans if you disrespect the opposition and disrespect your own players.
Is it even nice for your own players? I'm not sure. I saw, from where I was sat, so we were warned before because all the group, the fans group had already said, this is what we're going to do. So the City knew it. That's why the cops went straight, unlike other grounds, to do that little protection around the tunnel. So it was okay, no problem. But I saw De Bruyne and Zinchenko being completely squeezed by security guards to try to walk through. I don't think it's even nice for their own players.
It depends who the player is. If you're Rafinha, you love it, right? I mean, I know, and I think you have to be respectful. I'm not condoning it. I know it's illegal and so on. I don't want to hear stories from players saying, oh, what if there's one of these guys had a knife or a gun? Like, is this just stupid? Like, what does it mean? You never go outside? Not. Like, you know, like, what is the guy in the supermarket? Is that? But these people are going to make it so that it can never happen again. And to me, when it's spontaneous, when it's joyous, when you can revel in it safely, maybe you can't.
I mean, they broke their own goal. I mean, you know, I filmed it because I could tell at some point this is not going to last. And three of them were on the crossbar, and then a fourth one, then a fifth one, and obviously it cracked. It was just like, it was surreal. And I get the happiness, and this was an incredible scenario. Not sure. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it makes me sad, but I can also understand if you cannot guarantee people's safety, not just people's safety, because look, it's not like,
but there
it's
would
not
be like a problem one day, you know that. There we could easily be Vieira, a problem one we day. We were close with Olsen. Billy Sharp could have been even worse.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, I credit the city obviously condemning and making sure, giving a lifetime ban. Personally, I think lifetime bans, if they're properly enforced, can be very effective here, because then, you know, you think twice about it. But yeah, it does make me sad. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Back on Friday, Real Madrid drew 0-0 with Betis. On Saturday night, Paris Saint-Germain beat Metz 5-0. There you go. But guess what? We're not going to talk about those games because nobody cares. Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain, we're talking about something else. We're talking about Kylian Mbappe.
Kylian!
Doing a 180-degree turn, at least in terms of what most people expected.
Yeah.
Sending a WhatsApp on Saturday to Florentino Perez and saying, thanks, but no thanks. I am staying in Paris. Real Madrid did not take it well, but I want to focus first on Paris Saint-Germain. And I just want to ask why. Why? All season long, contract, not contract, why?
Well, I think he felt that there were still things he could achieve at the club, like becoming the all-time top goal scorer, if you want, hopefully lifting the Champions League as captain, those kind of things.
These are things that he could have thought that he could have achieved before, right?
Yeah, but I think there was a real dilemma. I think he changed his mind a lot. I think he really wanted to go to Madrid too. I think Madrid, as we've been saying, has been a dream for him to play for, wear that shirt. When he was 11, they tried to sign him. They've been chasing him for 12 years. They were close in 2017. They were not so close in 2016. They were close last summer, of course, because they made that big offer and he wanted to go. He was also happy to stay, but he would have liked to go. PSG never opened the door. So I can understand, really, they're like, what should I do? Should I stay? Should I go? Should I stay? Should I go? I want to stay. I want to go. I changed my mind. I want to stay. I want to go. All of that, I can understand. In the end, he made his call on his own. He's a big boy. I think there was, obviously, the parents there, the lawyer there, the extended family there, Florentino Perez, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, all of that. But in the end, he made the call himself. He decided himself, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be for one more year, 2 more years. The contract is 3 years. Right. I'm not sure he will stay the whole 3 years, but we will see. But this is the decision that he made. Money played a big part, of course, and also the importance and the power he has at the club now. But he thought this was the best place for
him. We've seen stories that, and these are the stories that I just don't believe them. I don't believe the fact that, you know, he's going to decide the next manager. He's going to decide the next director of football.
He has a big say on that.
He may well be consulted, but it's not something that you're going to put in a contract. There's a difference between a player who, you know, he's your star player, he's your biggest asset. There's a difference between you're going to consider how he feels about the manager and how he feels about the director of football. There's a difference between that and having it actually be part of the agreement, the way some people are reporting.
But it happened with big players before.
I don't think it was ever written down with Messi, and also it happened because that's what you're going about Messi.
This is not written down.
And Tata Martino.
Yeah, this is not written down. But I think part of the whole negotiation, the discussions was that he wanted to be at the center of the project so much that he wanted to be consulted.
Right. So this is what I don't get from Paris Saint-Germain's perspective. And we're going to get into this in a lot more detail, but just very quickly, just riddle me this, right? If this is about the project and so on, why 3 years? Why not 5 years?
He would not have agreed to more than 3.
Why?
because I think you give it 3 years and then you see where you are in 3 years' time, or maybe even before. What if next season he beats Cavani's record and they win the Champions League? Maybe he will feel, this is it, I've completed this. I've won every title possible for PSG. This is my hometown, this is my club. Now my work is done here, and I want to see something different in Madrid, in Liverpool, in Barcelona, in Munich, in Turin, in Milan, wherever he wants to. So why signing 5 years, 6 years, seven years?
Because then you can go out and say that, but then you're stuck and you have another 2 years left on your
contract.
But
I can tell you the same for Messi then, who kept having 1 year or short deals, extensions all the time.
Right. Well, no. But that's because Messi wanted to maintain the power. This is the thing I don't...
The same for Mbappe.
It's only the same for Mbappe if there's a release clause. And there's been no reporting, no evidence.
I don't think there is.
Purely speculating that this is not a good deal for, or it could have been a better deal if he had negotiated some kind of release clause. And I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it's a very good deal for Mbappe.
Maybe financially it is. Again, we don't have a clear handle on the numbers. There's crazy numbers going out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I was told by someone I think is pretty reliable that his base salary is 40 million euros a year. There's much higher numbers floating out there. There's people talking about monster amounts. This obviously prompted a bad reaction from Javier Tebas. Bad in the sense that he's very angry, the president of La Liga. Obviously, Real Madrid also furious. They feel that they were let down. I think Tebas has a point from a financial fair play perspective. This is a club that lost 350 million between 2019 and 2021, albeit pandemic affected. They're going to lose an enormous amount again this year because they signed Messi and Donnarumma and Danilo and Hakimi and Wijnaldum to massive contracts. There are rules, he's saying. In La Liga, they do enforce them, as we've seen with Barcelona.
Yeah.
All right, let's stick with this angle, the financial fair play angle, because I think, to me, this also plays into Mbappe's decision.
Mm.
And why my suspicion, purely speculative, I don't have any evidence of this, is that he'd be foolish not to have put some sort of escape hatch into his contract, which is this. Financial fair play was effectively suspended at the start of the pandemic. Since then, they completely, effectively, it's still suspended because obviously the effects of the pandemic. I mean, they're doing different things with accounting periods and stuff like that, and you can discount losses based on the pandemic. But it's very easy to argue that just about any loss you make has to do with the pandemic. So effectively, there is no financial fair play enforcement until the start of the 2023 season. After that, there is a new system where you're only allowed to spend a certain percentage of revenues on players, and by players we mean both wages and acquisition costs. So all this money that, and it doesn't matter if it's a signing bonus, it doesn't matter if it's a commission to the parents and so on, all of that goes into the spending on players pot. As I mentioned before, they racked up huge losses with the pandemic, 2019-2021. I don't see how they couldn't have racked up enormous losses again this time, given there was an early Champions League exit, and given that, you know, the TV deal in Ligue 1 is what it is relative to other leagues. Paris Saint-Germain have twice been sanctioned for breaching financial fair play.
That's right.
Although once at CAS, they kind of got like half overturned. Mbappe's not a stupid guy. He must be aware of this. Now, the cynical person, the Tebas or the Real Madrid fan in me, might say, well, okay, all this is true. But the guy who owns, the guy who runs Paris Saint-Germain, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, is also the head of the European Clubs Association, who negotiates the financial fair play deals with UEFA. He's also on the executive board of UEFA. He's also the guy who runs beIN Sport, who cuts enormous checks to UEFA for TV rights every couple of years. They're not serious about the enforcement. Does this mean that Mbappe thinks that they're not going to be serious about the enforcement?
I don't know. I don't know if he thinks that. I don't even think he thinks about it anyway.
Okay, but if you're his agent, shouldn't you think about this?
But why?
Shouldn't you think about the possibility that Paris Saint-Germain get kicked out? Get a Champions League ban if they're...
I think it's impossible to tell right now that they're going to be kicked out in 3 years from the Champions League. Is it?
It's 2023. It's not 3 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's the start of next season, right?
Yeah. But so the season after next.
Yeah, it would be the... Well, no, because I think they would look at the 2022-23 period.
Okay.
But whatever it is, right? When you talk sporting project, right?
Yeah.
I've been to the Parc des Princes. We've seen everything they've done. They've done a phenomenal job with the brand and whatever. But they are not a billion-euro revenue club. Not now.
No.
They won't be. They probably won't be in Mbappe's lifetime. I think that's just the reality of it, right?
Yeah.
So... Nasser has always said in public that, oh, no, we're compliant. We're not going to have any issue there. But it's easy for people to be cynical. You understand why people look at this and say...
I can understand the reservations, yeah, for sure. And how are they going to pay this contract? I don't know. I know the numbers, but I don't know the structure of it. I don't know who pays what directly. I don't know if sponsors are heavily involved or not in terms of striking a deal with Kylian directly. I don't know. There's the CVC deal coming up in France, but that's not going to cover the whole contract. I think a lot of it will be down to sales as well, which is Luis Campos, the new sporting director's big role with Antero Henrique, who's also helping out on selling. They're hoping that Neymar would go, so you would already save his wages, plus maybe getting a little transfer fee. The question was asked about Xavi and if maybe there would be a return to Barcelona for Neymar under certain conditions, I don't know. So I don't know what's going to happen. I just think it's impossible for anyone to know what... It's going to happen in 18 months.
Right,
Kylian himself. So what? You don't sign a contract and you say, well, I can't stay here because I'm not sure what's going to
happen. What you do know for certain is that in 18 months, Real Madrid will be financial fair play compliant.
Yeah.
You know that for certain.
But would they have been if they'd given him the 300 million euros
package? Well, but here's my thing, though, on the money side, right? And again, we don't have the figures, so we're purely speculating, right? Real Madrid, I mean, the way these people make money today is obviously they make money from wages and so on.
Yeah.
And maybe Real Madrid wasn't going to push the boat out to the same level. But equally, Real Madrid aren't shy about giving out mega contracts. Look at Cristiano's last contract, right?
Mbappe was a huge offer.
He had a big offer, but you know, he would have made more than Cristiano made when he was 23. But what I'm saying is, if he goes there and he produces, it's an even bigger one.
Yeah, true.
If he goes there and he's at, I think it's fair to say Real Madrid are the biggest footballing brand in the world. The stage, the commercial revenue, the sponsors, everything gets multiplied.
Yeah, completely.
The fact that he's changing clubs, right? Because he's associated with Paris Saint-Germain, but you kind of milk that cow, right? In terms of sponsors and visibility. So I struggle with the fact that this was just about money with Mbappe.
Because
if you're his agent or his parents, if money is your goal, you can make much more money over there. And you will make more money, especially when you factor in the risk associated with financial fair play, when you factor in the risk associated with Qatar pulling up the tents and moving out of town after the World Cup, which I think is still a thing because these guys, they're not stupid. They're going to bankroll losses forever, right? And so I look at these things and I'm asking myself, well, why? Again, I go back to this.
He's only 23. In 2 years' time, if he lives in 2 years, he'll be 25. He will still have the best years of his career ahead of him to go to Real Madrid or to go anywhere else where he's going to earn a lot of money.
So
I do think there was a part of the Paris and the PSG and the things still to be done for him there that played a big part.
Unfinished business, you're saying?
Yeah, and that sort of romantic side of it. But again, I really thought he was going to Madrid. I think he thought he was going to Madrid. And I was as happy as I am now that he's staying. It was a big twist. This was, and I've said it and I will say it again, this was the most incredible transfer saga that we've seen ever. And the most incredible twist at the end for him to snub again Real Madrid and made that U-turn that you mentioned at the start. 360-degree U-turn.
Real Madrid, 180. So it's 360 degree, he would have gone all the way around. Okay. Real Madrid, understandably, I think, not taking it well. Certainly they thought that they had him.
Yeah.
You know, has he burned that bridge 2 years' time?
Let's see. Right now, yeah, it looks like it. In 2 years' time?
You can only say no so many times.
True.
Arsene Wenger telling me that, like, he said no to Real Madrid twice and he knew there was never going to be a third offer.
So that point was... he said yes. The Mbappe clan said no. We said yes, that the offer that was on the table from Real Madrid, we were satisfied with it. That's what we said to them. We didn't say yes, we're coming, where do we sign? They said this offer is satisfying to us. We will let you know if we pick your offer or PSG's offer. So did Real Madrid see that yes as yes, this is on, he's coming? And did they get carried away a little bit? Or I still think they have a point in
do
the
they
sense
feel,
that...
Do Real Madrid feel used? Like you use this to get as much money as you can out of Nasser?
Played that card. But he played that card against each other. You know, he went to Madrid and then went back to PSG saying, oh, Madrid are giving that. You know, I think Luis Campos would have gone to Real Madrid if Kylian had signed that. Signed there, sorry. 100%.
All right, it's like slightly just because we brought up Luis Campos. Leonardo's gone. I think we can take it as read that Pochettino's going too.
Yeah.
Luis Campos is a weird figure because he's kind of a scout, kind of a director of football, kind of an intermediary. He runs his own business.
Yeah. He's very close to the Mbappe family. He's very, very close to Kylian.
He's not somebody who I think most a lot of people would respect his eye for talent and all this stuff. Also somebody who rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and there's a lot of questions about it, especially when he works for a club. Is he working for a club? Is he working for himself?
Yes, Van, very strong character as well. We will see. It's interesting. This is
a curious choice, I think. I think it's a very curious choice for Nasser to do.
Because Kylian wanted him to be at the club.
And Nasser realizes that one day Kylian might be gone, and it'll still be his club unless he packs it up.
For sure. But you can also see...
Or the Swiss prosecutor gets his way and he ends up going somewhere else.
But Luis Campos built an incredible team in Monaco and in Lille. It doesn't mean that he will build an incredible team in Paris, but he will have certainly more money to do so. They want a younger team. They don't want bling names like before maybe, so they're thinking that he can help for that. So instead of getting a 29-year-old Paul Pogba that costs you a fortune, you go and get a young Aurélien Tchouaméni, for example.
It's funny, Leo, for all his faults, and he's been number one critic, even though he is very handsome, a Champions League final and a Champions League semi-final, right? In 3 years.
Yeah. With a manager that he sacked in December that then went on to win the Champions League.
Let's see what happens next.
Ruben Amorim, I believe, could become the next manager and replace Mauricio Pochettino. And again, this goes on par with the Mbappe new contract, the Luis Campos appointment, the finding new energy, a younger project with younger players, and a manager that is a bit different to either who you could have got or certainly what you had before.
When it comes to Real Madrid, I think we can take it as read. They put all this money in the Mbappe pot. And to be fair to Real Madrid, there's some people are saying like, ah, ha, ha, look, Real Madrid, you don't always get your way. But Real Madrid kind of like saved up for this, right? They made cutbacks and stuff. Yeah. Now they're sitting on a big pot of money. Obviously, Rudiger's coming in. They're gonna make other signings. Do we take as 100% read that they have to bring in another winger at this stage?
This is a humiliation. Let's be honest here. This is a humiliation. Not only you lost, you missed out on Erling Haaland because you thought Mbappe was there, so you didn't really push for Haaland the way you would have pushed now, knowing that Mbappe was not coming. Then you miss out on Mbappe. Now you have to go and make a statement. So whether you try to go Mo Salah, which for me is a no-brainer, and we discussed it just before doing this segment, it's like, you know, and he would fit so well with, because of where he plays, with Vinicius and Benzema. And for who he is, for the market that he has, for the form that he's been in for the last 5 years, even at his age, you go for him.
So Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, but for obvious reasons.
Obvious.
I think it's inevitable that their names are going to come up because obviously they haven't extended it. I think if you're Real Madrid, you want to keep this quiet. You don't even go there because obviously you're playing Liverpool in the Champions League final. After the final, if I'm Salah's agent, I say, hey, look, I haven't signed the contract with Liverpool yet. I want to stay, but you know, you're entitled to do that. That's how negotiations work. Mm. If you're Liverpool, maybe you're not even so averse if you can get a decent fee in for him, rather than losing him potentially on a free in a year's time.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Jota, you've got Luis Diaz. You know, you can then have more money to give to Mane and lock him up.
Yeah.
Again, I think this story is definitely going to rumble on.
Yeah.
But just remember this: Real Madrid may have a black eye right now, but black eyes heal, and Real Madrid have a tendency to bounce back. All right, enough Mbappe. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Milan win 3-0 at Sassuolo, and it's their 19th league title. Jules, this one was different in so many ways.
First of all, because they had to wait a long time. 11 years is a hell of a time for a club like Milan to finally win that 19th one. It was done with a really, really young team. We've said that all along in the season. Stefano Pioli doing an incredible job with... two very experienced head in Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Olivier Giroud, who was clutch in that final game away at Sassuolo, where they didn't bottle up. I mean, they looked in control very much from minute one. So well done to them. Let's hope this is really the start of something very big, and they would continue to build that team like this, to keep doing the things that were successful for them this season, and I think they will. But that was a great achievement, because it was a tough season.
And they did it differently, breaking so many of the canons in Serie A. You can say, oh, look, we're just catching up with the Bundesliga or whatever. Yeah, sure, whatever. Say whatever you like. Fact of the matter is, they did it through youth. They did it through scouting. They did it through analytics. They brought in people like, ooh, Kalulu, what's that? You know, like, and then he turns out to have a tremendous second half of the season.
Tomori was
exceptional. Mike Maignan, a lot of people would say he was the team's MVP, and all he's doing is filling in for Gigi Donnarumma, best keeper at the Euros. Sandro Tonali, Rafael Leao, hello.
Clutch to the end of the season.
The future is really, really bright.
It is. And Gab, the inevitable question now, having won the title, having so many solid young players, why is the club up for sale?
Because Elliot are businessmen. And, you know, they said they came in, they took over from the chaos and lunacy of Leon Hong and whatever, and Fassone, and they said, we're going to invest money, we're going to rebuild the club, we're going to make it more valuable, and then we're going to sell it on. Now, are they definitely going to sell? Are they going to move out entirely? Are they going to keep a certain amount of the club? I don't know. You have the Bahraini offer, you have Redbird Capital, which is obviously the group also involved with Liverpool, and Toulouse. There's a lot of different options, but... You know, it shows that I think football can be an investable business if you're smart and if you have the liquidity to make decisions quickly. And this is something that they did. They put a lot of money in to make up for the debts and the running costs, and they've been vindicated.
Incredible.
Tottenham Hotspur destroy Norwich 5-0 to finish top four, and Hongmin Son joins Mo Salah atop the scoring table. Jules, how impressed are you?
I'm massively impressed by Heung-min Son. By Spurs in general, since Conte took over, really, I think it would be crazy for them not to do everything they can to keep him. But for Son, what a player. Not taking penalties when Salah had five, for example, in his 23 tally. There's none of that for Son. He's got a goal conversion of 27% in this season, which is incredible. If you look at his expected goals and the final numbers, what a player he is. Such a team player, two-footed as well, everything. He's just amazing. Underestimated, I think, a lot.
No question about it.
But
no question
about guy. It. And Gab, Antonio Conte would make a terrible bookie, because a couple of months ago he said there was 1% chance that Spurs would finish in the top four, and now here they are. Should they be worried, though, at Spurs, that he was lukewarm about his future after the game, saying that he needs to meet Levy and Paratici and to find the best solution? Do you want to commit to being there next season?
This is what he does. This is what he does, right?
Yeah.
He comes in... And he views it as an eternal struggle between him and the club to get the club to spend money to get him better players, right? Yeah. He says, I deliver on the pitch, but then I'm going to be a huge pain in your backside so that you release funds and you get me the players I want, because I'm a winner and I want to knock on whatever. I mean, I think Daniel Levy knew this, but I think he certainly knows this about Conte, having worked with him before. I wouldn't be worried, but there is always the risk that he's not going to get his way and he's going to throw a tantrum. Yeah. That is, you have to take the good with the not so good from Conte. But you know, those people who already hate Levy because he doesn't spend enough money, you know, they're all going to be on Conte's side. There's a lot of Spurs fans who feel that way. Arsenal beat up Everton 5-1 and finished fifth. Jules, there's a lot of youth, but also a ton of work to do. And it feels like they let fourth place slip out of their grasp. In fact, they did. Is Mikel Arteta's glass half full or half empty?
I think it has to be half full. I understand the fact that they missed out on top four narrowly. I don't think it's a bad thing. I'm not sure they would have been ready for Champions League football next season. I think it would have come a little bit too early. This is a very young team, the youngest in the league. I don't think they're ready. I don't think they've got the squad right now to play in the Champions League next season and do well in the Premier League either. I think Europa League and FIFA is certainly more where the stage they are now in their progression, but there's certainly a big progression. I think everybody within the club and around the club can see that. I think there's a really strong new connection with the fans, almost like the fans have found their club back, which I think is almost more important than finishing in the top four. So I think no one can tell me this is not a good positive season.
Who would have imagined that Arteta would be more charismatic and more connected to the fans than Unai Emery, huh?
Yeah, who would? Inter beat Sampdoria 3-0 and they finished second in Serie A. Gab, it's easy to forget how dire the situation was last summer with the departures and all of that.
Yeah, and look, I think this is why Simone Inzaghi, for me, I know Stefano Pioli gets a lot of credit, a lot of guys. Simone Inzaghi is, I mean, they should put a statue to him.
Yeah.
And the way the club operated. Again, I repeat myself, but losing Lukaku, losing Hakimi, losing Conte, losing Eriksen, from what was a phenomenal team, and he took it in stride, some smart signings, Çalhanoğlu. There's nothing to be, will they have regret because of the Bologna game and Radu's mistake and this and that, points they threw out, or, you know, the derby against Milan where, you know, sure, you always have regret. But I think you can be absolutely proud. You won the Coppa Italia. You beat Liverpool at Anfield, which, you know, is nothing.
You're the only team to do this season.
And weirdly, you played even better in the first leg, but then you lost. So, no, all these things together. Now the big question, and the uncertainty with the ownership, which remains. And they've done this all season with that uncertainty. So, onwards and upwards, but I think hats off to Simone Inzaghi and the players. Manchester United lose to Crystal Palace and finish in sixth place, but with 58 points.
58!
It's their lowest total since 1989-90, though. That season, of course, at least they won the FA Cup. And they had a guy named Sir Alex Ferguson there.
Yeah, yeah.
Jules, have we hit rock bottom?
Bottom.
Your thoughts on Erik ten Hag and Steve McClaren being in attendance and Ralph Rangnick saying he didn't know they were there.
I mean, this just adds up to the shambles and the circus that this season has been for Manchester United, because it was a mess. It still is a mess completely.
Nobody had the courtesy to tell him so he wouldn't look like a Muppet afterwards.
Completely. I don't understand that. Ten Hag was there. I mean, I'm not really sure why you go to a game like this when you know it's going to be rubbish, and it was rubbish. And I
wanted
I
to see
understand.
Hannibal Mensbury.
Maybe he wanted to pull out that jacket that he was wearing, you know, summery. Maybe he thought he was going to Wimbledon, which is not too far. I don't know, but it's been a crazy season, one of the worst in the club history, has to be said. I don't even know where you go from there. Now you've got a new manager, but how he takes this team forward, who you get rid of, some will leave, as we said.
PR wise, not getting off on the right foot, though. Definitely. Having him go there and having Rangnick say, exactly. Oh, you know he was there. I mean, come on, man.
This is a shambles. More United, Gab. According to The Athletic, a man named Leon Kornetka, who was Rangnick's assistant at Lokomotiv Moscow, so the former club of Rangnick, watched games from Russia and gave live feedback via United assistant Chris Armas to Rangnick and, you know, who had the earpiece on. How weird is this?
It's really, really bizarre. It's really bizarre because obviously you think, you know, I guess United wouldn't allow Rangnick to come onto a staff, maybe, or they didn't prove it because they figure it's only 6 months. Maybe. I don't know why you would be cheap with money there when you gave Rangnick a whole amount of money. Rangnick is entitled to all the help that he can get. I don't like it when these stories come out when a manager comes at the end and get all the bad stories, all the weird Rangnick stuff. Which are just going to come up in the next few days, right?
Yeah.
The man came in, difficult situations, did the best he could. Was it good enough? No. But, you know, move on. But it's certainly really weird that you feel you have, I also wonder, like, did why was Kornetka still, like, given their sanctions and stuff? Like, I don't know. So odd.
Could you see training as well? Or, well, it's
that's fine. Barcelona lose at home to Villarreal 2-0, but nobody's really too fussed as they still finish second. Jules, the future's relatively bright under Xavi. And later this month, we expect La Liga to tell them that their spending cap is no longer negative.
That's right, which is good. They were ninth when he arrived. They finished second. There were some really high moments. We saw the Atletico win. We saw, of course, the Real Madrid win at the Bernabeu, which was fantastic. There's still a lot of work to be done, a bit like we said before with Arteta, a lot of clever choices to make this summer. But I think they're on the right path, so that's good and well done to him.
Sergio Roberto, 1 year extension.
Oh, no, please. Leipzig win their first ever trophy, beating Freiburg on penalties in the German Cup final. Gab, no love lost between these two. And my boy, Christopher Nkunku, scored again and was decisive.
Yeah, who else is going to do that? There is a ton of bad blood.
Ooh,
obviously, Leipzig, seen as a plastic artificial club, violating the spirit of the rules, 50 plus one, all that. Freiburg, Community Cup, you know, they play into it. I wasn't surprised that it was so tight. Let's not forget Leipzig only finished three points ahead of them in the Bundesliga table.
Freiburg, the better team, I thought, as well.
On the day, you could argue that. You could definitely argue that. But very, very happy for my boy, Domenico Tedesco.
Yeah.
Robert Lewandowski, tip of the hat to Derek Ray there. His agent, Pini Zahavi, told Bild just how angry and upset his client is with Bayern for not offering a new deal. He says, and I quote, "Sure, he can stay and play next season, but I wouldn't recommend it," close quote. That sounds ominous, Jules. What's he implying?
I was just waiting for this interview. We knew it would drop at some point that Pini would speak and would kick this all off, really. And he did in even better fashion than just the quote that we put in there. He said, Bayern is history to him. Bayern is this, you know, he's that, blah, blah. This is going to be, we said that the Mbappé saga is finished now, it's over, and we're happy with that. But now it's, the next one is Lewandowski and what's going to happen. And Bayern can say as much as they want, he's not going to go anywhere. I think Pini, I would want to believe Pini when he says, and you know him better than I, but when he says, I would not recommend you forcing him to stay here. I think that could be a disaster. I still think he's going to go.
You know what? I
know you're club power
in
here. Right?
Sorry?
Are you club power on this topic? Are you more
100%? And I'm really surprised that you're doubling down on this.
But you know Pini. You know Pini is going to go for the fight, yeah?
Fine. Go and have the fight over the summer. But you also know how hard-headed these Germans are, these Bavarians. And you know what? I'm sorry. But they hold the cards. Honestly, because guess what? Even if Lewandowski doesn't play a minute next season, I still have them as favorites for the Bundesliga title. I don't care.
There's no point keeping Lewandowski if he doesn't want to be there, if he doesn't want to play. Well, you're going to leave him on the bench.
First of all, you have to find a buyer. And I'm sure Xavi talks about Lewandowski, this, that. It's fine. We don't even know if they can afford him, right? First and foremost.
Yeah.
Right? Secondly, I'm surprised with Lewandowski. At some point, Pini works for you, right? David Alaba never reached this level of acrimony. Even that was an acrimonious departure. If they don't budge because they don't want to have this problem in a couple years' time with Gnabry or Kimmich or whoever, right? No, if they don't budge, what are you going to do? You really want to go and like be remembered as the guy who tarnished? Because this does tarnish your legacy.
And also, with the season starting earlier because of the World Cup, that means he will have to go back to Bayern earlier than normal.
Precisely.
So it's going to be July is going to be amazing.
And not only just start earlier, and then the Champions League also starts earlier as well. So you could have a situation where you're cup tied. I never begrudge a player for looking out for his interests. But there's a smart way to do it. If you have all your eggs in the Barcelona basket, unless you know something I don't know.
He's upset. He's upset, Robert. He's upset. Don't upset our Robert.
Real Madrid?
Oh, imagine. Him and Karim? Yeah, I would like Karim the Dream and Robert together. I would fancy that.
I don't know.
I'd pay for that. I'd pay to see that.
I would love to know what Pini's plan B is here. Because we know Oliver Kahn has a plan B, a plan C, and a plan D.
Juventus lose away to Fiorentina, who thus clinched a coveted Europa Conference League spot. Gab, were you surprised to hear Allegri say that it was a painless defeat and that Juve's season was dignified? I mean, the dignified one is out of this world. Come on.
Okay. So, Max, you know I love you. And I appreciate I appreciate your honesty in saying it was a painless defeat. Painless for you. Makes no difference. I know that's what you meant. I don't think fans like hearing that, but whatever. You know, we're all grown-ups here. But dignified, you finished 8 points behind Andrea Pirlo. And unlike Pirlo, you did not win a trophy.
Yeah.
Now, Pirlo is seen as some kind of complete waste of space and whatever. And you can say, oh, but I lost Cristiano and he had Cristiano. Fine. You had Dusan Vlahovic for half the season. You got Zakaria. You're Max Allegri. He's Andrea Pirlo. Andrea Pirlo was a rookie thrown in there, asked to completely change the system. You should not be comparing. Nobody should be comparing
That's
you
crazy.
To. This is not.
I'm amazed.
What you do is you take it on the chin and you say, we had injuries, we're rebuilding. Yeah. It's fine to, you know, losing Ronaldo on the last day of the transfer window, that's not an excuse, right? It's a mitigating factor. It's a legitimate thing to say. And just say, we're going to rebuild. He did say, you know, just a solid base. Again, solid base. Okay. Vlahovic, Chiesa, if he's fit when he comes back.
Yeah.
Locatelli.
Yeah.
Zakaria, De Ligt, obviously. I mean, McKenney, who now supposedly they want to sell to raise money. I think it's a long way back. You got to be a part of it. Luca Pellegrini, I think, is a guy who's been overlooked. I think he can contribute.
But
just say, we're going to come back and we're going to take Juve back where we belong, and I'm going to make it happen. That's all you got to say.
Let's talk relegation.
Oh.
Some of us predicted Leeds United would stay up, and they did just that, although they got a little help from Newcastle, a lot of help from Newcastle, who won at Burnley. I just want to start with the dude's handball. I'm blanking on his name because for the penalty. This is the mother of brain farts.
Completely. And that was a big help, of course, for Leeds and Jesse Marsh. Well done. He came in for that to keep them up, and we can debate on how, if he did well or not. He won three of his four games in added time, against Norwich, against Wolves, and then in this game, although the draw would have been enough, but incredible atmosphere with the away fans, Rafinha with them, half naked, just incredible. For all the good that Leeds had last season, and that season they had with Bielsa, for all the difficulties and the struggles and the injuries and the suspension and the crazy stuff that happened this year, the change of manager, it's almost maybe a bigger achievement to have stayed up compared to finish 10th last season, or a very similar one. Well done to the club. And sticking with Burnley, Gav, that big loan the owners took out to buy the club now needs to be repaid early because of the relegation. How nervous should fans be?
Well, we're going to find out whether the owners are telling the truth. They said, oh, no, we've got the money. If we have to repay it early, we can repay it early. Okay, fine. If you got, I want to say this, right? If it's an obligation, they'll meet the obligation, right? But obviously it's going to have a knock-on effect because if you're repaying this loan early, that's liquidity you don't have for other things. And that is the thing that would worry me if I'm a Burnley fan. Monaco give up an injury time equalizer at Lens. Finishes 2-2, and it means they don't finish second.
Incredible.
This doesn't take away from their season, does it? And their revival?
Yeah, no, certainly not. The second half of the season, which was incredible. 9 wins in a row going into that last game. A win, and they were guaranteed second place, which means Champions League group stage for sure next season. And they thought they had it. 2-1 up. They thought it was the 10th win. And then the last kick of the game, literally Lens at the Stade Bollard scores, and all the Monaco players on the floor could not believe it. They will have to go through the qualifiers rounds, and they might still make it. But still, you're right. Congratulations to Wissam Ben Yedder, who had an incredible season. Or Philippe Clément, who arrived from Bruges, struggled at the beginning, and then got this team playing really, really good football. They're going to lose a few players, as always, but trust Paul Mitchell to replace them nicely and see what happens next season. But it was a heartbreak for them still, though, because they really thought they had that second place. And wild relegation battle in Serie A 2, Gab, it felt surreal seeing Salernitana lose 4-0 at home and celebrate, and Cagliari draw 0-0 against the already relegated bottom club Venezia and go down. Incredible. And Davide Nicola doing a miracle again.
Yeah, no, and losing the final game. Yeah. So there's an unwritten, historically in the past, there's been kind of an unwritten code in Serie A, but not just in Serie A. Let's face it, right? When you have a team that's desperate to avoid relegation or to win a title, and they're playing a team with nothing to play for, mm-hmm. unless there's a particular rivalry, what you do is you be a nice guy. You help out. You don't go hell to level. Oh, it's always been that. But I mean, I think,
I'm so Italian, though.
Well, it's not just Italian. It's Spanish.
Well, Aston Villa didn't do that.
Well, because they got Gerrard and whatever. And then that's a bit different because it's Man City.
Okay. But
it was historically unreal. Okay. And if you didn't do that, you were a bad guy, right? Because you know what? My mortgage, these are relegation battles, right?
Yeah.
These players, I'm sure they're all millionaires, but they're not multi-millionaires. They're not, their salaries get slashed when they go down and whatever, right? So to have Udinese, to have Salernitana at home with a tremendous team, tremendous fans, right? Salernitana very obviously took for granted that Cagliari were going to win against Venezia, who were already relegated. Salernitana went for it. They gave up. They were 3-0 down at halftime.
Yeah.
They gave up all these goals on the counter. Udinese went for it too. They said, you know what? We're going to play this game. And then you lose 4-0 at home. But it doesn't matter because Cagliari can't get it done on the Lagoon in Venice.
Oh,
my word. 0-0. They cannot beat a team that's already relegated. Honestly, big shout out to Udinese.
Yeah.
And bigger still, shout out to Venezia. This is what football should be like. The old days, they're gone.
Yeah.
In most cases. It has to be that way. It's been a big change for Serie A. Really, credit to Udinese and especially Venezia for playing this out. Mm. And Cagliari, bye bye.
All right.
Atletico Madrid beat Real Sociedad 2-1. Jules, they finished third, 2 points out of the second. Was it really so bad for Diego Simeone? His 14-game mini-season strategy worked,
well,
right?
I'm not Well, yeah, because they finished in the Champions League places, okay.
They nearly knocked out Manchester City, who you were gushing about in the Champions League.
So, maybe bad is the wrong, but it could have been or should have been much better. This is what it is. There's an argument to be made that this is the best squad in La Liga, certainly at the start of the season, that he messed it up completely at times, that we saw some shocking performances, some shocking results. I mean, the Levante game at home, losing that way, was just, for me, just is summing up so well this season. Yeah, they finished better, of course, but they still have a lot of things to look for next season to improve, because, I don't think it was good enough this season.
They were defending champions. They expected so much more. They doubled down.
We did.
Depau scored a great goal, by the way.
Yeah.
But and Griezmann. It's
still no good for Griezmann.
I think there's a lot. I think Simone needs to take some time off, have a really, really long think.
Completely.
Over what happened.
Completely. Chelsea also finished third, but we already knew that. Still, they finished with a 2-1 win over Watford. I mean, Ross Barkley's winner in the last second. Well, crazy stuff. And Kai Havertz has a new haircut and he scored a goal too. Gab, is he still about the same right now? That should be done this week?
Yeah, they say it's done this week. It's down to the government, down to Abramovich and what they work out. We still get all these little leaks. Oh, it's happening. It's happening. We've heard that for a long time. Todd Bowley's there. I'm pretty sure Todd Bowley's not a season ticket holder at Chelsea, or wasn't at the start of the season. I wonder, does he pay for his own tickets to go there?
He gets
a freebie?
Yeah, I think.
Because they're not allowed to sell tickets, right?
He gets a free seat in the box.
But I didn't recognize Kai Havertz. I was watching the highlights and I'm like, ooh, who's playing up front? Is this some kid from the U team? Did Armando Broja sneak back? No, and I'm like, oh, it's Kai Havertz. Marseille get to celebrate second place in Ligue 1 thanks to Monaco slip-up. A bit of love for Jorge Sampaoli, please.
Yes, of course.
Stop laughing at him just because he's weird-looking and angry.
We don't. We love him. He's going to stay now. I think there was a little doubt had they finished third, for example.
Sampa,
great work. They deserve, as good as Monaco were in this final stretch and the final sprint, Monaco and Marseille have been second for most of the season. They deserve to be there. I think they are the second best team in Ligue 1 for what was an incredible Ligue 1 season. One of the best we've had, certainly this century. And Marseille will go straight into the group stage. The Velodrome was incandescent on Saturday. It was fantastic to see for that game against Strasbourg, and they will do the same in the Champions League. Late last week, Gab, FIFA released their list of referees for the 2022 World Cup, and in a historic first, there are three women on it, including Stéphanie Frappart.
That's right, Stéphanie Frappart, and then there's I'm sorry, I don't follow women's football, so I couldn't tell you, but there's a referee from Japan as well, another one from Africa. These are women who have refereed men before. These are women who, I think, have shown that they can handle this. I think it's really important for this. One little twist, which I don't know how many picked up on, is that there's 36 referee slots at the World Cup. These three women, but there's 39 going to the World Cup. So these three women were kind of added to the list. It was important, I think, for FIFA to show that we're not adding people and bumping somebody off who would
might
otherwise
not
be in
the referee.
No, I think everybody will be involved. Okay. Not everybody might get to referee a game. Some will be fourth officials, right?
Sorry.
I mean, that's the same for the men, right? Because people ultimately want to have the best referees in the best games. But I think it's so important for them to be there. Stéphanie Frappart, who I think has refereed at the highest level out of those three.
Yeah,
she would be my bet to get a game. They're going to have to consider certain things. Like, obviously, it wouldn't be very smart to have Stéphanie Frappart referee Iran or Saudi Arabia or whatever. But, I think it's an important step.
Definitely.
They've been there. They will have had that experience 4 years from now. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Aston Villa are on the verge of securing Boubacar Kamara from Marseille as a free agent. Jules, we need a little hype video for Villa fans.
Oh, my God, Villa fans. This is one of the coup already of the summer transfer window. I can't stress enough what talent Bouba Kamara is. He can play as a centre-back. He can play central midfield. He's clever. He's strong on the ball. He's strong physically. I remember when I said that Steven Gerrard was in the Velodrome to watch him play personally and then to meet his agent and meet Bouba. And I still thought, okay, great for Villa to be following and targeting a player like that, because it shows that you're thinking a bit outside of the box and you go for him, even if there are other clubs like Atletico Madrid, like Juventus, who were also linked with him, who I think also had an interest. But I didn't think they could pull this one out. And for them to do that, I think it's really, really, really well done. He's going to be, he's perfect for English football, for the Premier League. I mean, I am so happy for Aston Villa and for Kamara, because I think working with Gerrard is great, and Villa are a great club. It's a fantastic club, and it would be a great experience for Bouba to go there. So I really hope this one goes through. I think it should go through from what I was told this morning. So well done for both Kamara.
Is he better than Douglas Luiz or Marvelous Nakamba?
I think he's certainly better than the centre-backs that they have right now.
And you see him as a centre-back more than a defensive midfielder?
It depends what you look for. He can even play as an eight. He can do everything. He's really, really that good. This was back on Friday night, but Roma beat Torino 3-0, Gab, as Tammy Abraham scored a hat-trick. Gab is up to 27 goals in all competitions and can add to it in the Europa Conference League final on Wednesday night against Feyenoord. What a season.
He also hit the woodwork like 10 times this season,
crazy.
Or 8 times, or something stupid like that. He's been phenomenal, and he's been a big part of revitalizing. We talked about Mourinho's connection with the fans and stuff. Roma are super excited. It's Europa Conference League final.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be? Max respect for them. And I think he definitely has to be in the frame for the World Cup as well. No question about
definitely.
It.
Definitely.
Boca Juniors win the Copa de la Liga in Argentina,
well,
defeating Tigre 3-0. Jules, pressure easing on Sebastian Bataglia.
Yeah, it did. Although he hasn't actually lost many games, but it's the way they play more than anything else. This is a new competition which qualifies you for the Copa Libertadores, for example, already. But they won it. They'd won it before. And at the end, maybe the best bit of it all, despite the easy win, was Marcos Rojo with the kids on the pitch, and all the players celebrating, and with the either a cigarette or maybe something else, I don't know, but just like smoking on the pitch as part of the celebration was just perfect. So Rojo, in all his brilliance. So well done to Boca, well done to Rojo.
Regarding celebrations while smoking, of course, both Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, yeah, and a cigar?
Much cooler than that, with a much bigger cigar, maybe because, let's face it, he needs a bigger cigar than Ibra. Bakayoko
Of course.
He had his shirt jacked up all the way up. It looked
they
like
love doing that, yeah.
Yeah, he looked like he was, you know, he was wearing like tidy whiteys or something, or like Speedos. And he had this massive cigar. Yeah. And fans absolutely love him.
Valencia beat Celta Vigo 2-0. But Gab, the story is the stunning fan protest outside Mestalla.
I tweeted a video of this. If you're going to do it right. I mean, enormous amounts of people on the street. Somebody filmed it with like a drone. I mean, it looked like, I don't know, while the game was going on outside. We know what it's about. They don't like Meriton Capital. They don't like Peter Lim. Mm. The situation drags on forever. He won't leave. He won't sell. Crazy. They can't find a buyer. I don't know what it is, but honestly, owners and directors.
So toxic.
So toxic. Yeah. And now he's made it, because I guess he's older and he's rich. He's made it like a point of pride
exactly.
Stay on forever. And I think Valencia deserved better, frankly.
Definitely.
Porto beat Tondela 3-1 to win the Portuguese Cup. Jules, it's a double for Sergio Conceição, despite Luis Diaz midseason. Not too shabby.
No, it's all Gavin. Remember, they also beat the unbeaten record in the league, 59 games in a row. That belonged to Benfica of the 70s. So what an incredible season, and I guess you go again next season in the Champions League. You know, maybe it could have been better, but I think they still played with a lot of pride and did a lot of good things all season long. So well done to Sergio Conceição. Borussia Dortmund will part ways with Marco Rose. Gab, once again, they paid a huge amount to get him just 12 months ago. They will need to pay him a huge amount to go away. What, again, crazy stuff. We said the same about Adi Hütter. Yeah. On Thursday's show. This is similar. What a big mistake. Costly mistake.
I don't get this. And when you bring this up, they're like, oh, but, you know, we have these release clauses for managers which can only be activated in January, so you can plan for next season. Like, yeah, you plan for next season. In the meantime, you screw this season up.
Crazy.
I feel for him. I was a big fan when he was at Gladbach 2 years ago. His last season at Gladbach, not so much. Some people are even saying, oh, maybe Lucien Favre will come back. I think that
would Terzic?
Be. Terzic is the guy who...
He did a decent job when he took over Favre.
You would think would make sense, right? I don't know. I hope Marco Rose gets an opportunity elsewhere. Again, I said this before, Dortmund, too many people have told you you're the smartest people in the room. You're not. A bit of humility in making your right choices wouldn't hurt. Ronald Koeman says he won't manage in club football ever again.
What a shame.
Jules, to paraphrase Richard Nixon, you won't have the Dutch guy to kick around.
Oh, that's a real shame, Dutch guy. I would have loved to go to see you going back to a club level and fail again, like so many often. It was fun until it lasted for you and your club career.
Yeah.
Now it's the national team for you, so let's see what you can bring. I don't know.
Wait until you find out that Luis Campos and Ronald Koeman are blood brothers.
Oh, my God. No way. I know that. Leeds United are very close to signing Brendan Aaronson from Salzburg in a deal worth around 30 million. Gab, good fit?
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money for a 19-year-old or 20-year-old.
But he's still very young. Yeah. Obviously, you know, you always have to do the waiting with Salzburg and Austria because it is the Austrian league, and you play on the best teams with the best players and the most money and so on, and that can inflate your numbers. But he did really well in the Champions League as well. Mm. I'm wondering now about the economics of MLS a little bit because, you know, I don't know how much Salzburg paid to get him, but it certainly wasn't 30 million.
Yeah.
But obviously Jesse Marsh will have worked with him before
knows
exactly what he's getting. And good news for Greg Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team, too.
Completely.
Olympique Lyonnais win the Women's Champions League, beating Barcelona 3-1 in Turin. Jules, I guess Barcelona are not unbeatable after all.
No, we thought they were for a long time this season. Then Wolfsburg gave a little warning in that second leg semi-final, although Barcelona were clear because of the huge win in the first leg. And then Lyon show and call them out, really. The first goal by Amandine Henry, which is an amazing goal. A long-range strike. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. I think put Lyon in a very comfortable position because then they could wait and let them the ball. And Barca struggled. Barca struggled to come back into the game. One incredible win for Lyon, the eighth, because they've had an up and down season, really. They're not sure to even win the French League. They're all going to be on that PSG game next weekend, I think. So incredible, incredible to do this because I don't think many people had them favourite before. So.
Amandine Henry, by the way, for the avoidance of doubt. Not Thierry Henry's
sister or
whatever.
Or
not even related to Thomas Henry, who plays for Venezia. No,
no,
nothing.
No, no,
no? Okay.
No. Right. It's just another Henry. Or Henry Winter either. Nothing to do. One last day of the season, so let's end it with Super Mario Balotelli. He scored 5 for Adana Demirspor in the 7 win over Göztepe, and one Gab will live on in YouTube history and social media history.
I honestly, if you haven't
incredible.
Seen this, just go find it. First of all, we love Super Mario. It's so Super Mario. Like, I think it's like a third of the goals of the season have come in this game.
Yeah,
right?
18
like,
is closer, yeah.
But that goal, a billion step overs to Nielsen's side. Yeah. 8 step overs?
Eight.
Of course, Jules would actually stop it and count
it. Of course.
And then, and a bona finish.
I love it.
We love you, Mario. Come back
soon.
Jules, end of the league season, end of the show, but don't worry because we're not leaving you. We're going to be back at least until June 23rd, and we're going to be back on Thursday.
Yes.
From the City of Light,
woo-hoo!
From Paris.
Yes.
I believe you were born and bred.
Indeed.
I've been told. So join us for that. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.